I was thinking about going through it again. Please be seated.
Dude, you totally got me on that one. I took the deepest breath, getting ready to bellow out, and you totally froze me. That was awesome. Well, it's so good to see everyone here this morning. For those of you who are visiting, I will go ahead and tell you, I am not a preacher who likes to sit. And so I'm going to explain why I'm sitting in a chair this morning. I like to be up and walking and engaged. But about 4 weeks ago, I hurt my foot. And during the week, I've been nursing it. It'll get a little bit better. Then Sunday rolls around from 5 in the morning until services are over at Central in the afternoon. I'm standing on my feet, and by the time I get home, my foot is swollen and in a lot of pain, and it starts the whole process over. And so my doctor suggested that as I preach and teach for the next couple of weeks that I sit on a stool. And so y'all pray for me. This is really, really tough. I don't know if I can do this, but I'm going to do everything I can to give it a shot. I do ask that you pray for me. I injured myself playing Ultimate Frisbee. I know y'all love that. Go ahead and laugh. I don't care. Some of y'all are thinking, you need to grow up. That's okay. But y'all pray for me because I do. I want to get out there. I love sports and I love competing. But also, Ultimate Frisbee for me is one of the ways I'm able to get out in our community. And so I need to be back out there. And so please pray that my foot gets better. For those of you who are visiting with us, for the last couple of weeks, we've been in a series entitled Running the Christian Race. And what we've been talking about in this series, and really the way we concluded this series, was talking about how we got to keep running. Because the fact of the matter is, the race is long, and the race at times is really, really hard. And that goes for all of us at times. And so we can get tired, and we can get discouraged, and we can become tempted to quit. And what I want to do is I want to just kind of take that for the next couple of weeks, and I want to just talk about some of the areas where we might be tempted to quit. And the first thing that I'd like to mention and talk about is God. How many of you would be honest enough to say, and you don't have to raise your hand, but how many of you would be honest to say, there have been times in your life where you've been tempted to give up on God? That's nothing new. In fact, if you turn with me to 2 Corinthians chapter 4, we're going to go back to the first century. And really what was taking place was you had some Christians who had become disillusioned, you might say. They were the first century church. No one had been Christians before them, and so all of this was very, very new. And no doubt, some of them went into Christianity as many people today enter Christianity, thinking to themselves, if I follow Jesus, then my course is going to be clear. I mean, if God is my Father, then life is going to get a whole lot easier instead of harder. And that's what happened to a lot of those back in the first century. That's what happens to a lot of people today. They're disillusioned. Because the fact of the matter is, all of us, whether we're a Christian or not, and we've been talking about this for the last couple of weeks, all of us are going to experience hard times in our lives. And here's the deal. At times when things get really, really hard, we're tempted to quit. We're tempted to give up on God. And as we look at the first century church, as we look at the church at Corinth, some of them were starting to lose faith. Because not only had life been hard, but now that they had become a Christian, it seemed like life had even gotten a lot harder. And so they began to question their faith. And so Paul writes, and he says in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, and you can look there, you can look at verse 7, he uses this metaphor that all of us are like jars of clay. Now, the church at Corinth would have really understood this. They would have gotten this because during this particular day and time, jars of clay was a very big business. I mean, it was everywhere. Jars of clay were everywhere. Some of them were very beautiful and very ornate. And so when Paul brings up this metaphor, when he describes them as jars of clay, they would have understood it and they would have gotten it. And this is the point that Paul was trying to make to them and us. Here's the truth about jars of clay. They're very, very fragile. They can break very easily. I remember the first time our family discovered this. How many of you have ever been to a little place called Webb's Candy on 27? Any of you ever been there? It's the place, you know, at the top has goat's milk fudge. Didn't sound real appealing, but anyway, goat's milk fudge, and I think there's a Dunkin' Donuts attached to it, but years ago, when our kids were little, we thought, you know what, this would make a great outing. And so we went into Webb's Candy on 27, and we went to the back. And I don't know if this is the way it's still set up, but we went to the back where there was this glass window, and you could watch them make the fudge. Now, for some reason, on this particular day that our family visited, there was all these jars of clay that were stacked kind of like stairs in front of that window. Maybe they were getting ready to put some out, but I mean, this was really expensive stuff. But my son, Shepherd, who was really little at the time, he goes running back to that window and seeing these pots stacked up, he just kind of walked up the pots and he's standing on these jars of clay as he's watching the fudge being made, and all of a sudden those jars shift and they shatter. Well, my wife, I'd already gone back out to the car, my wife goes to the front, goes to the counter, tells the lady, I need to show you something, takes her to the back. And when the lady sees it, she is just taken back. She says, oh no, I can't believe this. I mean, she is really upset. And Julie said, I'm so sorry. We will pay for the damages. This is our fault. And the lady literally looks at her and says, just leave. Just leave. And so we've been banned from Webb's Candy. I don't think we've ever been back there, to my knowledge, unless maybe stop in and get Dunkin' Donuts. I don't know, but we've been banned. But we realized that day that pottery, jars of clay, is very, very fragile. And Paul says to the church at Corinth and to you and me, that's us. We're like jars of clay. There are times when we can be nicked and chipped and broken, and that may be where some of you are at right now. You're broken because some of the things that you're going through. And maybe there are some of you who have even gotten to the point to where you're thinking about giving up on God. And here's what I would ask you, even if you've considered in the past giving up on God, why? And I want you to be honest with that question. Why did you consider giving up on God? And I think if we were honest, I think probably most of us would say, well, because this bad thing happened in my life and I went to God with it. And I asked God for help, and it just didn't seem like God helped. You ever felt that way? Sometimes we go through some things that are really, really difficult, and we're tempted to think, can I really count on God? Can I really count on Him? I mean, I asked God to do this, and He didn't do it. I asked God to please not let this happen, and it happened. I brought something broken to God, and I asked Him to fix it. And it just seemed like it became even more broken. And it's during those times that we're tempted to question God. Does He really love me? Does He really care about me? In fact, I think so oftentimes when people get to the point where they say, I don't believe in God, I don't think they're questioning His existence. I don't think it's a matter of, you know, whether they believe in God or not. I think the question is He really there for me? Does He really care about me? Does he really love me and want what's best for me? And it's during times like that where we question that we're tempted to give up. And again, that's what's taking place in 2 Corinthians chapter 4. For the church at Corinth, they're discovering that, you know what, even as a Christian, life can get really, really tough. And we're really, really fragile. And so Paul is going to speak into that, and he is going to share with them some things that hopefully will help them and also us to hang on during those rough times. Now, listen to me this morning. Paul is going to be very, very real. He's not going to say, look, when bad things happen, I just want you to pretend like it's not really that bad. No, he's not going to do that. He's going to be very, very real. But he's going to encourage them to hang on. And so if you will, look at verses 8 through 9. Notice what it says after he talks about how we're jars of clay. He says, we are pressed on every side by troubles, but we are not crushed. We are perplexed, but not driven to despair. We are hunted down, but never abandoned by God. We are knocked down, but we are not destroyed. And so notice what he says at the very start. He says, we are pressed on every side by troubles. In other words, Paul is very real. You're going to have troubles. And sometimes it's not just one thing. Sometimes you get it from every side. And some of you know exactly what I'm talking about. I mean, you just feel pressed in. But he says, we're not crushed. Why? Because of the hope that we have in Jesus. When you think about being pressed on every side, you got to think about Exodus, where the children of Israel are in Egyptian bondage and God sends Moses to lead them out of that Egyptian bondage, to lead them out of Egypt. And Moses leaves with the people of Israel, and then remember, Pharaoh changes his mind again. He said, I made a terrible mistake. I want them back. And so he sends out his army to bring them back. And the army of Egypt catches up with the children of Israel, I mean, right at the point to where they show up at the Red Sea. And so they've got the Red Sea in front of them, and they've got the Egyptian army behind them. And so literally, they are being pressed from every side. And some of you know what that feels like. And this is how they responded. Exodus chapter 14, verses 10 through 12. As Pharaoh approached, the people of Israel looked up and they what, church? And they panicked. When they saw the Egyptians overtaking them, they cried out to the Lord and they said to Moses, "Why did you bring us out here to die in the wilderness? Weren't there enough graves for us in Egypt? What have you done to us? Why did you make us leave Egypt? Didn't we tell you this would happen while we were still in Egypt? We said, 'Leave us alone. Let us be slaves to the Egyptians. It is better to be a slave in Egypt than a corpse in the wilderness.'" And so notice, the pressure is on the people of Israel. And what do? They panic. And they blame. And they complain. How many of us would be honest enough to admit that there are times when we're tempted to do that? Something bad happens, and instead of thinking about all the times that God has delivered us, all the times that God has rescued us, and all the times that, you know, God has just done big things in our lives and brought us to where we are at this point. So oftentimes we want to complain about it. And we want to blame God for it. And here's the problem with that. When we blame and when we complain, we make ourselves the what, church? The victim. And here's the deal. When we become the victim, listen to me this morning, it becomes very easy to quit. Well, Slate, you just don't understand the family I came from. The family that I'm in. I mean, if you just understood how harsh my parents were. I mean, you don't understand my marriage, Slade. I mean, if you knew how unattentive my spouse was and how unaffectionate my spouse was, I mean, you would understand more of what I'm dealing with. And if God had have just opened that door, I mean, I don't want to quit. This is not something that I want to do. I'm not a quitter, but Slade, you don't understand. I don't have any other choice. What else am I supposed to do? And we look back at the children of Israel and the pressure's on. And they panic and they blame and they complain. And well, notice how Moses responds, verses 13 through 14. But Moses told the people, "Don't be afraid. Just what, church? Just stand still." Isn't that awesome? And watch the Lord rescue you today. The Egyptians you see today will never be seen again. The Lord Himself will, what, church? Will fight for you. And so, do what? Just stay calm. Don't panic. Just stay calm. But here's the challenge that goes along with that. God rarely is early. Right? I mean, God works on His timing. I mean, I think that probably most of us, if we could rewrite this story, what we would do is, okay, well, you know, maybe we'll let the children of Israel come face to face with the Red Sea, but I'm going to keep Pharaoh's army from ever leaving Egypt. I mean, I just don't think it's fair for them to be pressed on every side. And so in our minds, you know, we come up with all these different ways that we would do things if we were God. But God's understanding is so much higher than ours. And He's rarely early. He does things at just the right time. And so here they are, the children of Israel, they're at the Red Sea and they've got the Egyptian army behind them. And this is what God says in verse 18. He says, "When My glory is displayed through them, all Egypt will see My glory and know that I am the Lord." In other words, there's something about pressure that allows God to put His glory on display. Amen? I mean, that it's during those times in our lives where we've got nowhere else to turn, right? That God has this opportunity to demonstrate His power and His strength in our lives. And that's what He does here. And that's what it means to be a jar of clay. I've witnessed this in so many of you here at Central. I wish I could bring some of you up here on stage just to tell your story of how God has used your terrible situation to bring about His glory, to display His power and His strength. Maybe that you found out that you have cancer, and cancer is a terrible thing, but then God lines it up to where you get the perfect doctor. And His glory is on display. Or maybe you're struggling financially, and maybe you're pressed on every side because it's Christmas time and you want to do for your family, but the finances are already a struggle, and then your church family takes up money and they support you. And God's glory is on display. When the Red Sea is in front of you and the Egyptian army is behind you, be still. And let God fight for you. In verse 8, he goes on to say, "We are perplexed but not driven to despair." How many of you would say that there have been times when you just did not understand why something happened to you? Or why it happened to someone else that you love? I mean, you are perplexed. I don't get it. I'm confused. I had someone that I was talking to this past week who told me the exact same thing. I don't understand. I am one of God's children. How could He let this happen to me? I don't get it. Sin wasn't involved. Why would God allow this to happen? I don't understand. I'm confused. Sometimes we're perplexed. We don't understand, but we're not driven to despair because we know that God knows what we don't. And God sees what we can't. The Hebrew writer says in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1, "Now faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what, church? About what we don't see." There are things that God sees that you and I, we can't see. And so during those times, we are to have faith, knowing that, guess what? He is still writing our story, and He is still in charge. How many of you have ever put together a puzzle before? During Christmas, one of the things that we love to do as a family at my mom and dad's is put together a Christmas puzzle. But how many of you have ever tried to put together a puzzle without the picture? Anybody ever try to do that? Is it easy or is it hard? Oh man, it's extremely hard. In fact, at Christmas time, I've got to have the box right beside me so that I can see the picture, so that I can see what I'm working toward. So that I can see where all the pieces are supposed to line up. I mean, without the picture, you know, you'll probably be able to still do the end pieces, right? But what do you do with the pieces that fill in the middle? What do you do with that without the picture? That's a challenge. Well, faith is working on a puzzle when you don't have the picture. You know, you're trying to put the pieces together, but you don't quite understand it. but you still trust in God. Like Abraham, remember in Genesis chapter 12, verse 1, God comes to Abraham and he says, Abraham, I want you to move. Well, where do you want me to move to, God? Well, I'm not going to tell you. And Abraham steps out on faith and he does what God says, trusting in God that he sees the bigger picture. Or what about Genesis chapter 37, where you have the story of Joseph, and remember God gives him this dream that he's going to become this great leader, and then right after that, remember what happens? He's sold into slavery. But he didn't quit. He continued to trust God, that God knew what he didn't, that God could see what he couldn't. He continued to walk in faith. And what about David, right? David in 1 Samuel chapter 16, he's actually anointed as a young boy as the next king over Israel. And then for the next several years, he is running for his life from the previous king. And so God says, here are the pieces. But we don't have the picture. And we try to figure it out. Maybe, you know, we even get some of the end pieces together, but we don't have the picture and it's difficult. And God says, trust me. Romans chapter 8, verse 28 says, and we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love Him, who have been called according to His purpose. God's going to put the pieces together. Stand still and trust Him and watch Him work. This past week, Eva Joyner shared something by Toby Mack on my Facebook page, and I don't know how many of you know this, but Toby Mack, the Christian artist, back in October of last year, 2019, his 21-year-old son died. And this is what Toby Mack wrote. It might not make sense right now, but someday you'll see how he was putting the pieces together all along. We're perplexed, but we're not driven to despair. Verse 9, we're hunted down, but never abandoned by God. We're going to experience opposition, and Paul goes on to write in Romans chapter 8, verse 31. He says, if God is for us, then what, church? Who can be against us? Now the question is, do we really believe that? Ask yourself right now, do I really believe that God is for me? Because if I really believe that God is for me, I'm not going to quit. If I really believe that God is for me, then I am going to persevere. And some of you may say, well, that's the problem. How do I know that God is really for me? Well, he answers that in the very next verse, verse 32. He who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all, how will he not also, along with him, graciously give us all things? Is there anything more valuable to God than His Son? No. And yet He gave up His Son for you and me. And so logically, we know, of course God is for me. God wouldn't even withhold what's most valuable for me. And so we can't look at our circumstances to say whether God is for me or God's not, because so oftentimes that's what we're tempted to do. You know, we're going through bad situations. Well, God doesn't care anything about me. God doesn't love me. God wouldn't allow me to go. No. We don't focus on the circumstances. We continually look to the cross. Because it's at the cross we see the truth, and that is God is for us. I don't have time to read all of Romans 8. I'll challenge you to do that this week. But verses 36 through 38, Paul writes, does it mean he no longer loves us if we have trouble or calamity or persecuted or hungry or destitute or in danger or threatened with death? And he goes on to say, no, despite all these things, overwhelming victory is ours through Christ who, what, church? Who loved us. Finish that off this week. And then lastly, in verse 9, he says, we get knocked down, but we are not destroyed. Now, that word knocked down there literally means an anticipated hit. How many of you would openly say there have been times where, man, you've been going along in life, everything is perfect, everything is great, and then all of a sudden, boom, I mean, out of nowhere, something bad happens in your life. And you're knocked down. You're blindsided. But you get back up. It's one of the really cool things about being a minister is I get to see and I get to witness so many of you who have been knocked down, but you've gotten back up. And that's a blessing to me because it really strengthens my faith. Because I have seen so many of you go through things that are so tragic and heartbreaking. And I've seen so many of you who have gone through just extreme hurt. And you've gotten back up. And you kept running. And some of you may be thinking, well, how did they do that? Because their hope was not in this world, but in God. 2 Corinthians 4, and I'll close out with verses 16 through 18. Paul says, that's why we never give up. Though our bodies are dying, our spirits are being renewed every day. For our present troubles are small, and they're not going to last very long. Yet they produce for us a glory that vastly outweighs them and will last forever. And so we don't look at the troubles that we see now. Rather, we fix our gaze on things that, what, church? That cannot be seen. For the things that we see now will soon be gone, but the things that we cannot see will last forever. When you're knocked down, if you want to get back up, don't focus on your circumstances. Fix your gaze on Him. Because it's God who gives us the strength. It's God who gives us the hope that we have and the victory that we have in Jesus, His Son. And so this morning, we want to offer the invitation. It may be someone here today who's going through something difficult in your life, and you need prayers. We would love to lift you up before God. We would love to come and surround you as a church family and encourage you in whatever way we can. It may be that there's someone here today who's not a Christian. Maybe because of the circumstances that you've gone through, you've just kind of dismissed God. You've gotten to the point to where as you've looked around at the world, you've thought to yourself, I don't believe in God. He's never done anything for me. But He has. He sacrificed His Son so that you could spend all eternity with Him. And today, if you want to know more about Jesus, I would love to tell you all I can and all I know about Him and how you, through Him, can be saved. Believing that He is the Son of God, putting your faith and your trust in Him, putting on Christ in baptism. Galatians chapter 3, verse 27, having all your sins, anything and everything you've ever done, completely washed away. Acts 22, verse 16. And there's so much more good news I'd love to share with you. But if you have a need, won't you come as together we stand as we sing.